Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money, major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a chap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Can we make just one big choir? You know, in choirs, we got to rock. Y'all ready to rock? Let's go.
it's time for another installment of It's My House. Today's podcast is titled Manufacturing, Turn Your Problems into Products. Manufacturing, Turn Your Problems into Products, 619-768-2945. Now, if you go to the program notes for today, if you're on Blog Talk Radio, go to our page, It's My House TV, It's My House TV, on or Solar Landlord, either one of those, on Blog Talk Radio, you'll see our program notes. So we're going to be talking about manufacturing. Now, a lot of people, everybody's got problems. But a lot of people, when they get problems, particularly of the financial nature, they get stressed out. Arguments pop up. Or should I say, not stressed out, but distressed out. Stress is good, but distress is the problem. Arguments break up. But arguments can lead to breakup of relationships, cause family or relationship strains, health problems, on down the line. But those problems are just an indicator, a prosperity indicator, of what you need to do to turn that situation around. So in one of the ways, now this is just one strategy, which is multifaceted, but manufacturing, you can take your problems, and if you think about it, you meditate it and take that problem and then turn it into a product that you can monetize that will solve your problems. Now, going to the program notes, one of the things that I realized, and I'm always in some type of school, well, not always, but a lot. Now, let's take it. Most people have been through grades 1 through 8. Many of us have been through grades 1 through 12. Some have been through college and all that. But let's take grades 1 through 8. You know what? I'm even go grades 1 through 5. All right. We have these word problems, and some of the word problems were easy. Some were more difficult, but they made you think. And I think, in my opinion, this is my opinion, a lot of those problems that we went through for grades 1 through 8 or 1 through 12 or even in college, university, they were general word or math problems. You know, Bob has 10 apples. If he ate two and somebody stole one and he gave away three, how many does he have left? Stuff like that. While you were working on those math problems, grades 1 through 12, your parents or guardians or whatever, they were working on, man, you know, how are we going to solve, having enough food on the table. Where are you going to get the money to clothe the kids? Where are you going to get the money to take a vacation? What do you do when you have, when you have an emergency need for a lot of cash? Those are real life math problems. Now, so far, I've been able to go to law school for a year. I got two more years to go. I'm on an extended break right now. But one of the distinctions I discovered in law school, and anybody can do this. Okay, you don't even have to go to high school for this, is in addition to the regular course load in law school, as a matter of fact, honor roll students do this too, I discovered. All right. And that's, we're talking about high school, even junior high. What I noticed is that, because there were quite a few law students that were doing this, is in addition to the regular work that you were assigned, they would work on, because in law school you get a lot of quizzes. They would work on, like, maybe a in addition to that, on their own. This is not part of the curriculum. On their own, they would work on 100 legal questions or 100 legal, legal questions on a daily basis. You know, might be on the topic of torts, criminal law, whatever topic it is, but they would work on 100 test questions for law school quizzes. All right. And then we've done some podcasts here on It's My House where, we've had some homeschoolers or whatnot that have kids that test honor roll level. And they're not any smarter than anybody else. What I can see is the distinction between the person who is a D or a F student and the honor roll A student, there's only one distinction. One puts more time into the topic than the other one did. So, you can take a F student or a D student, and if they work on put more time into it by getting a tutor and then working on at least 100 problems that they were having difficulty in a short matter of time, particularly if you got to master the fundamentals first, within a short order of time, they'll be on the honor roll level within a semester, I would say. All right. So going to the program, though, today, and once again, our title of the podcast today is Manufacturing, Turning Your Problems into Products. And this came to me last night or early this morning with my weird sleeping hours. I've got friends in China, and I've got friends, I'm going to say, in Southeast Asia. Not far from China, but I don't want to name the country because I don't want to offend anybody. Chinese people I know, they come from China is a culture of production, manufacturing. They lead the world in manufacturing. Whereas these other friends that and the ones that I know, okay, and this was via Facebook, the Chinese friends that I know that live in China, most of them work for factories in a sales capacity, maybe in a factory, but they are part of the production or manufacturing chain. Now, my other friends who live in, let's say, Southeast Asia, man, I've been asked for smartphones, pay hospital bills, pay funeral expenses. I get asked on a regular, I need money for food, birthday presents for the kids. And the only distinction is between China and these particular other Southeast Asia countries is China has a culture of manufacturing. In other words, they solve their problems via making things, manufacturing things, versus the other people that I know in Southeast Asia on a cultural level in their countries where they're not manufacturing or producing things at the rate of the countries. So if you've got a problem or problems, go from sad to being happy because those are your opportunities to turn those problems into a product. And a service. Because with a service, okay, like cutting the grass, that's a service. All right, you wouldn't have to make the lawnmower. You can probably borrow the lawnmower, rent the lawnmower, something like that. You provide a service. With the Steve Harvey thing, one of the examples that he gave, his friend that was cutting hair that became a millionaire, for $10. Cutting hair is a service. Cutting grass is a service. And the more the math or the arithmetic in this, because arithmetic has four basic functions, addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. So Steve gave a real simple example. $10. It's not difficult to get $10 if you're performing a service. All right. And then the arithmetic is, or the multiplication is, you know, get nine more people, I mean, you know, nine more clients and cut their hair, or nine more subcontractors. And so we're going to be doing this on a regular basis, particularly through our It's My House TV Patreon group. And I'll go through that. We'll be doing a test run tomorrow morning about this time of day, 10:30 in the morning, Eastern Standard Time, but more on that later. But anyway, going back to our program now, so I realized, and I'm coining these terms, that a lot of people, homeless people, struggling people, people who have declared bankruptcy, people who have tax problems, all, you know, all these problems basically are math problems. You know, husbands and wives fighting over the bills, math problems. So I've got some distinctions here, and these things we'll be covering in the detail Patreon group. And here are the distinctions I've come up with. Now, generally speaking, there are real-life math problems, and there's real-life arithmetic. And the distinction between those two is, once again, with arithmetic has basically four functions: addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. And a lot of those real-life math problems or can be solved with real-life arithmetic. All right. And there's now, there was a storm in New Orleans and several other places, but the storm in Louisiana, although I wasn't there, like it, I had to learn some real life math. But you know what? We're going to go through that too. So there's storm weather arithmetic. There's millionaire math or arithmetic, which Robin is good at. Because matter of fact, when I called her, I don't know, a couple of nights ago, it was about midnight where I'm at. Robin's 3 hours behind. But I called her with a math problem. Excuse me, I had a storm weather math problem. Okay. And then what Robin did was Robin solved that problem, or she gave some solutions with millionaire mathematics. So she's proficient at that. All right. Now, there's, you know, there's social capital mathematics, which is very vitally important. There's utility bill math problems, because you got some people that might have their phones shut off, the electricity shut off, gas shut off, or whatever. And the number one reason why that's happened, because most people get a reason, well, I don't have enough money. No, that's not the issue. You can solve that utility bill problem if you got to know how to solve. And most of us have not sat down, and we've never taken a course, and nobody's never instructed us on utility bill math problems. There's pandemic math, which has happened. There's a lot of people around the world that, due to the fact that they don't know anything about pandemic math, they've never heard of the term, they've never been in this situation before, they don't know what to do, therefore they're struggling to feed their families. And then when they lift this ban, this moratorium, excuse me, you know, there's going to be people that need to know about eviction math and foreclosure math. These are all, there's more than this. But these are basic fundamental distinctions of mathematics or arithmetic that apply to real life. And taking a chapter out of what a lot of law students do, what we shall be doing in our Patreon group, we'll be doing quite a few things, but we're going to be attacking, you know, for instance, Washington, D.C. used to be called Chocolate City. It's not Chocolate City anymore. Some people call it Chocolate Chip City. it's gone from like 70%, 71% African-American down to maybe 48, 47% African-American. And the reason why is a lot of black folk don't know anything about generational math. Or, you know what, hold it, let me, that's another one I didn't come up with. Generational, let me spell it right, generational wealth arithmetic. Let me spell that right, arithmetic, okay. I had to add that into the program notes. Because a lot of people, when they're looking at, well, why don't you sell something? That's a strategy that a lot of people, that's that one strategy that a lot of people know. And when you're selling something, particularly the ancestral home, the mode of operation that you're using is subtraction. You sell the family house, you have subtracted that away from the entire family. No generational wealth is created. And a lot of people might look at, well, you know, man, I can earn, you know, because for a lot of people, that might be their once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to earn $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 or more. But there are other modes, there are three other modes of operation where if you use addition, multiplication, or division, you can keep the family home and still make $500,000 or more and still keep the family ancestral home. So we'll be going through these different on the regular, and we'll, you know, we want to take your real life math, because that's everything that you're dealing with, the car note, having enough food, all these problems are essentially arithmetic problems. And you can solve a lot of these problems via manufacturing. You can take that problem and turn it into a product and then use one of the operations of mathematics or arithmetic to solve that problem. Just like, you know, I play at least once a week Factory City. You know, one of the reasons why China, I mean, because you got a lot of Chinese millionaires now and some billionaires. But you look at, if you listen to Factory City, they organize teams of 25 people to 35 people and crank out 5,000 or 6,000 coffee pots or whatever they're making in a day. Yet you got other people in other communities that you're trying to get a second job or a third job or go back for 2 or 3 more years to get this degree and that degree or get an Amway kit or a Mary Kay kit. That's slow math. The Factory City examples are all examples of, and you got Americans that do that too. You do have Americans that do that too, who are into manufacturing. And there's so many ways to do it. You know, you might be good at sewing. Sewing is, seamstresses and tailors are also manufacturers. They take they take fabric and they turn it into something. Adam and Eve, when they discovered that they were naked and had shame, some say this is the first industry. I think it's the second industry. I think the first industry was farming in that Garden of Eden. But for others, they think that the first industry was sewing, because when Adam and Eve discovered that were naked, to sew some fig leaves together or whatever, what they leaves together, you know, to hide their body parts, what have you. First industry. Or the second industry, depending on who you talk to. So for them, nakedness became a problem. But they solved that problem by sewing the leaves together. Adam and Eve, in fact, de facto manufacturers. The first fashion show was done by Adam and Eve. Real life math. So we're going to be doing a test run tomorrow morning, Saturday at 10:30 a.m. We've got four categories for It's My House TV on Patreon. Let me put that out there right now. The first category, and we're going to be updating tomorrow in each session because I just put out something that we can start with. The first tier, and let me go to it right now. That's somebody else. Oh, man. Okay. Patreon. Here we go. Okay. We got a $3 tier, $3 per month tier. We have a $5 per month tier. We have a $500 per month tier, and we have $1,000 per month tier. Okay, now before I open up my phone mics, let me go through, and this is subject to change because we do the first test drive tomorrow morning at 10:30 a.m. You're welcome to pop in on that. And with the It's My House TV Patreon account, we shall be let's see, I'm trying to find the page where I got my tiers. We'll be presenting content there that we don't present on here. Okay, here we go. For $3 a month, you'll be an official patron of It's My House TV. $3 a month, basically, I mean, it'll be ad-free, early access. There'll be some bonuses in there. But essentially, $3 a month, and we're only going to take 15 people for that. That's what I'm saying right now today. And that basically helps us with this podcast. It helps reduce the cost that we spend on this on a monthly basis. So that's $3 a month. Okay, that you'll be an official Patreon member for It's My House TV. All right, now, the next more interesting one, membership, via Patreon will be our brainstorming Patreon. Okay, that's $5 a month. All right, and there'll probably be opportunities for you to earn some money on that. But that's the brainstorming Patreon. That's $5 a month. And the next category is our solar home Patreon, and that's $500 a month. Now, this is for serious people. We'll have weekly briefings via Patreon. There'll be an offline project where we'll be building solar homes, off-the-grid homes. All right. Your $500 will be used essentially to get materials and needed tools on that particular project. So that's what the Solar Home Patreon account is like. We'll also be going through how you can, and this is hands-on stuff too, you know, how to build your own place or how to build a rental property and then earn money from it. So that's the Solar Home Patreon account, that membership basically, if you work it right, and that's why we have the brainstorming section on how you can do that. And then the last category is the E-Village Patreon membership. And essentially, we're going to be setting up e-commerce villages. Now, in order to get to this fourth level, I'm going to tell you straight right off the bat. Now, that's $1,000 a month. You won't be able to get in that category, and we're only going to take up to 9 in that category, but you can't get to that category until you have successfully completed a project in our Solar Home Patreon tier. And then on top of that, even after you've successfully participating and helped build a solar home, there's a 90-day waiting period after you do that, with you sustaining your membership, to even then you have to apply for the E-Village patronship, which is $1,000 per month. So you got to come up with $500. You got to sustain that for 90 days, and you have to successfully complete at least one solar home project. If you're at it every month, you're going to complete 3 solar home projects in a 90-day period. And by that time, you should be able to have made the money to qualify for the E-Village patronship, which is $1,000 a month. And that one, you're going out and you're, you know, we teach you what to do on how to buy land by the acre. And then you've already been trained on how to put together a house and then put it on that land and then have a community of people. So tier number 4, 3, actually, the only 2 tiers that are really going to be available to people are the official patron, and that's limited to just 15 people. The brainstorming patron tier, that's right now, that'll be wide open. There's no limit on that. Okay. The solar home patron tier, there'll probably be about 9 to no more than 12 people in that tier at best. But once again, the solar home patron level and the E-Village patron level, you got to wait 90 days. Those aren't available right away, okay? So particularly the E-Village, it'll take you 90 days, and that's after you have completely set up. I mean, with the solar home Patreon thing, within a 90-day period of time, you're going to have, if you pay your $500 a month membership, you'll have 3 opportunities to build 3 homes and make some money. But you got to do at least 1 to completion within that 90-day period. And then you still have to apply for membership. So it's not automatic, or you got $500 or $1,000. You can, no. You got to come up through the ranks. So for people that just want to support the mission, we're only looking for 15 of those people at $3 a month. All right, and you'll get a lot of heads up on a lot of stuff and some good content. And then the brainstorming session is essentially $5 a month, and we're going to be going through a lot of these different distinctions of math problems and arithmetic problems, and that's to prepare you so you can get to $500, so you can get into the, you know, get in, become one of the 9 to 12 people put a solar home Patreon category. So we do a test run for that tomorrow morning. So, like I said, we're not taking anybody's $500 to $1,000 now, but we're preparing you on how to get to that simply by somebody, you know, if you want to get in. The closest thing you can get in to that to prepare for that right now is become a brainstorming Patreon. That's $5 a month. If you're not interested in brainstorming with us, then it's $3 a month. And you'll be up on a lot of stuff. Okay. So, on that note, wait a minute. Before we go to Robin, let me play this and then I'll go to Robin.
And now, an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money, and war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? To teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. They're going to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? Because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Mr. Garvey said, Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show you your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children, because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.
Okay, I'm going to take that and switch it up probably by Monday. I've added today's podcast is titled Manufacturing, Turn Your Problems into Products. And I've added on to our program notes Chinese menu arithmetic. Yesterday, I mentioned the Chinese menu that I had in my hand. And you can, if you got a menu in your house of a Chinese menu or whatever, Chinese carryout menu, the one I was looking at, they have over, at first I counted 211, but they have really over 311 items on their menu. That's 300, that's over, I'll just round that down. That's over 300 paychecks that are in that menu. And this is what I'm talking about, real life arithmetic. Now with them, because what they're manufacturing are meals. That menu, the core fundamental elements of that Chinese menu, with over 300 profit centers in it, is, let's do the arithmetic now. Chicken, beef, pork, seafood, rice, vegetables. They take the, now that those six items are in most households anywhere around the world. Now let's say, get this visual: there's a Chinese carryout in a middle class neighborhood where, because in a middle-class neighborhood, there's no shortages of people struggling. The distinction between the average household that might be struggling in a middle-class neighborhood and a Chinese food carryout that's in a middle-class neighborhood, regardless of the demographics, is that struggling middle-class neighborhood, that household might have two people that bring home, at best, four paychecks a month. The husband's got two jobs, the wife's got two jobs. At best, four paychecks a month. Or a combination of he's got a paycheck, she's got a paycheck, and maybe they got a Mary Kay kit. Somebody's selling cosmetics. Somebody's got an Amway kit. You know, he's selling food bars or what have you. However, the Chinese food carryout, this middle-class neighborhood where a good portion of the households are struggling financially, they've got, and this is why I call it Chinese menu math. They've got over 300 ways to make money off of those items, those basic items that I just named. Chicken, let's do the math. Chicken, beef, seafood, rice, and vegetables. That's the common denominator in a Section 8 household to the wealthiest zip code in the United States. Let's continue to do some Chinese menu math, or should I say arithmetic. On average, they have about 300 customers that pass through their doors. On the item that I had, on the menu that I had, the least expensive thing was 75 cents, crispy noodles. The most expensive thing was $10.95. They had, it was more than $10.95. Most expensive item was maybe $14, $15. I don't have the menu in front of me. But a lot of the items sell for $3, $4, $5. Lunch specials are $6.95. Just on their lunch special menu, which is available Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 3 in the afternoon, they have a list of 32 meals that they prepare for you that, you know, for $6.95. They give you enough for two people. So multiply 32 32 lunch menu items. And it's what, $6.95 for the lunch special. I'm not calculating here. Wait a minute. Okay, here we go. All right, $6.95 times 32 items on a lunch special menu. All right, so you got $222.40. And let's say they take 200 orders for lunchtime. Okay. $44,480. Give or take in 1 hour. And that's not even a whole menu. Once again, they've got over 300 items on their menu. That's why I think it. Now, for the people that are struggling out there, And we're going to do just like the honor roll students do and the law school students do. Part of our Patreon thing, particularly in the $5 tier, we are going to be working on real-life math problems every time we meet. Because some of you, to get out of the hole, you know, $44,000, $44,480, that's what many Chinese food, not only Chinese food, it can be anybody with a restaurant, or anybody, you don't even have to have a restaurant. Anybody who has a product, you could be selling soap, you know, Dudley products or whoever's out here selling, or if you got a Mary Kay kit, how many items in the product line? It's really all arithmetic. It's all arithmetic. Addition, multiplication, it's $695, then you got 32 items. And if you get now with the Chinese food restaurant nowadays, because this is just more math. This is more arithmetic. This is first grade shit. You can get some orders online. You can get some people that drop in and place an order. Or you can do by phone. Or there's DoorDash, Uber Eats, Postmates. It's all arithmetic, all addition. And this $44,480 that comes in on the lunch break, Monday through Friday. Let's keep on going here now. $44,000 would solve a whole. Now, granted, now I'm giving you a sanitized version because, you know, they do have to re-up on food supplies and pay people. But, you know, typically everybody that's in that restaurant cooking and everything, they're family members. They might get somebody outside the family to make deliveries. But that's only after they're taken care of on the family level first. But what they're doing, once again, is they're manufacturing food. They're manufacturing meals. So let's take the $44,480 that came in for 1 hour. All right, so the lunch break meal for this particular Chinese, which is a mile away from where I'm at right now. All right, 11, 12, all right, 12, 1, 2, 3, 4 hours. Let's say they average $200 orders per hour times 4 hours for the lunch rush. They've made $177,920. Some of you had to work how many years to get that kind of money? I'm going to stop right there. They have the same. Now, granted, they're buying their food by the bulk. So they're getting it at a less expensive price. But you can do the same thing. But in any event, if you got a map, if you're struggling, if you got these, like I say, most of the problems that a lot of people have, even if you're sick, best is to be sick. You might have to get out here and, you know, bake cupcakes. But don't rely on the cupcakes alone. Like I said, you can open, let's say you decide, you listen to this podcast, you know what? You're going to open up a Chinese food restaurant. But you decide, you know what? I'm only going to have one item on the menu. One egg rolls, that's it. I'm going to specialize in egg rolls. Not different type of egg rolls, just one egg roll. You might make it. And that's what people are doing with having a one-household paycheck or a two-household paycheck or even a five-hole house paycheck. Start thinking like restaurant owners or retailers. Start thinking like them. How many items can you on your product line list? And once again, your problems, because like I say, the other night when I went to Robin for a Millionaire Solution, I ended up coming up with and this was dealing with a refrigerator. And long story short, Robin came up with a millionaire solution. But part of the answers for that was, you know what, instead of having the tenants go out and buy a refrigerator, I need to start at least partnering with somebody and moving the refrigerators myself. And the refrigerators are bar size because there'll be a lot less waste. A lot of people buy refrigerators that are too big for them. So that's part of my product line now, refrigerators. Now, you know, you don't have to go to Home Depot. You can order from us. And there's some other things as well. But anyway, 425, your mic is open.
So my mother always said, necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah, you're right about that. Because I was a necessity two nights ago.
Yeah. And it's really all a matter of perspective, because we can look at it as a problem and go, oh, my God, we're doomed. We can't do anything. Or we can look at it as an opportunity
right.
for change, to
right.
make a difference, to become better. So,
right. Now, Robin, one of the distinctions
yeah.
that I have on here, which you're the professor on it, I'm not up on it like you, is millionaire arithmetic or millionaire mathematics. Now, you out there for a while. How long did it take you to develop it? I mean, because you were out there for a while. And you pretty much come up with situations on how to.
Yeah. It only took me a matter of minutes to come up with, but it took me a long time for it to occur to me.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so basically, the millionaire concept, it's using what you have to prosper or come up, if you will. Okay?
Right.
So you might look around and you might, let's say you're broke, you don't have a job and you're broke. You feel that you're broke. You think that you're broke. You don't have a job. Maybe you don't even have a place to live. Okay? Well,
mm-hmm.
look around you and look and see what you have and look and see what's available to you, starting with yourself. So for me, for instance, it happened for me. I'm walking down the street trying to kill time because I have all day before I can get back in the shelter and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Same thing for finding something to eat. So I used to walk past this lady working in her yard. So I would ask her, hey, is there anything I can do? Can I help you? And she'd say no, and she was really mean. You know, just get away from me. Leave me alone. Finally, I stopped asking her. I just sat down, and I just started pulling up weeds. I grabbed a broom, started sweeping, mopping. I can't pay you. That's fine. I'm not asking you to pay me. Well, soon she started giving me sandwiches. Then she started
mm-hmm.
giving me a few dollars. And I realized, wow, I just created a job for myself. Mm-hmm. So you might feel that you don't have anything, but look around you and see what you have and see what you can make an opportunity. And it always happens with the dialogue. Everything happens in the chat room. Jesus Jesus even had a chat room. The upper room was a chat
right.
room. Okay? So you
right.
and you simplify things. It looks like you don't have anything. You just pull and use what you have. A problem, you can turn that around and find a silver lining and make a bit out of it. Okay? So,
right.
you know, okay, so for instance, I was homeless, and that lady, she couldn't have hired me, but basically she did because she gave me a couple of dollars. Now, I'm sitting thinking to myself, now she's got this lawn equipment, she's got this house, she's got this and that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wonder if I could ask her, hey, can I borrow your lawnmower and I can go over and mow these three lawns and then I'll come back with $300 and I'll give you $100. I wonder if she'd go for that.
Right.
See? So now a person that's broke, homeless, if they change their thinking and look around them, how many neighbors do you have that need help? An older lady, a single family, a disabled person, or whatever. How many people have that you can go and help them and service them, and then borrow their tools or equipment? Okay.
You know, Russell Simmons wrote a book that mirrors what you're saying. He says basically whatever you do, like you're saying, it could be cooking, it could be cutting grass or what have you. He said give it away. Give it away and then you know, do your best. And then sooner or later, you'll have so many people requesting your services that you're going to have to charge. So he said start off. And you know what? If you look at Yahoo, Google, and Facebook, okay, young billionaires with all those companies. But what did they do? The what they call freemiums? You know,
yeah.
Google and Yahoo
yeah.
gave away, what do you call it, email addresses.
Yes.
You know,
they
so
still do.
They still do. Facebook, okay, it free membership, and these guys all became billionaires in their twenties, really. Just whatever it is, as Russell Simmons says, give it away, and then you'll get so much. You'll get some. It multiplies and comes back so that you know you're gonna. Then you'll have to charge. You there, Robin?
Oh, yes, I am. I'm sorry. I thought you
yeah.
were still talking. But, yeah, so you can take and do that over and over again. So
mm-hmm.
there are 11- and 12-year-olds. There's a kid in Washington State somewhere built a tree house, or
okay.
not a tree house, but like a toy house, a clubhouse,
mm-hmm.
right? And actually, I think it was a tree house, and Airbnb'd it with
Man.
His parentel.
What a story.
Okay.
That, you know, now you know I got to go
okay.
hunt for that.
So the same thing, kids can start a courier delivery service on foot. How?
True.
Create an app. They call and place an app. The kid, the children, and I'm not talking about 5- and 6-year-olds. I'm talking about, you know, 12, 13, 14, whatever. But they can go to the pharmacy and pick up an order and walk it over to Mrs. Johnson, okay, or they can do chores. They used to have Rent-A-Kid up here.
Mm-hmm.
rent a kid. You can rent a kid to do chores, dust, sweep, mop. Same thing. So a kid can get an app, and he can an elder can get that kid, and that kid can be dispatched, and they can take out their garbage, do their mail, walk their dog, do whatever. Yep. And matter of fact, I think I'm going to create that. I'm going to create a kids' chore app. A kids' chore.
Well, you got grandkids, so put them to work.
Yeah, but I'm going to make it available for the whole world.
Okay.
Yeah. See? And make it open so that it, now all these families can start a business. Your children can start a business even before they're 18.
Yeah. That's what, going back to the Chinese menu, most of these Chinese carryouts are family-based businesses. So, you know, that's why I say people, look what kind of money they put in. Oh, damn. I don't want that. You know, I found the story of the Airbnb, the kid with the Airbnb thing. Okay, hold it. I'm trying to. See if I can
please tap the allow button to begin. Please click on the blue allow button.
Now I don't think it'll let me copy it. Let me try another one. Let's see. I'm gonna have to find a new way to get my audio. All right, let's try this one.
Why? What happened?
No, the same. They done changed up. I think they're trying to. Or here it is. Let me see.
Who's
if
they?
What the hell?
Who's?
You know, you got programs convert. Man, what the hell? Okay. I'm going to try one more time. Let's see if this works.
Try 123 apps. 123apps.com and then scroll down for audio converter or video converter and put in
the link. Okay, wait a minute.
One, two, three apps. And then you might have to scroll down on the page to find the audio converter.
Okay, I guess I'm going to have to do that. Okay, what's that? Hold on, wait a minute. Let me open up a new window.
One, two, three app.
Okay.
And then scroll down on the page to audio converter. You have to get on it. It's going to give you a whole bunch of lists, so make sure you're on 123 apps.
Hey, I'm on 123app.com, yeah.
Now scroll down for audio converter.
Okay. Actually, audio recorder.
Video. You're trying to convert a video, extract the video, right?
Right.
Yes, sir.
Audio tools. You said video converter?
You want video.
Okay, PDF tools, converters, audio. I want audio. Oh, video converter, right?
Yes. And you converting to 1.23 MP3.
All right.
You see it?
Man. Yeah, I just clicked on it, but hold it.
And then it'll open up, and then you drop in the link.
Okay. All right, video converter. I just clicked on that. Okay, now. MP3, or hold it, they got MP, what the hell?
You have to drop in your link, and you're going to convert it to MP3.
All right, it's got open file.
URL.
All right, I see, okay. Ah, okay. Then let me paste that in.
So 1.23 apps, you can go there for.
All right, it says fail to
converters.
Open. It just said fail to open remote file.
Is it,
okay,
what is it, a YouTube?
Yeah.
So is it a private YouTube? You might have to find another one.
No, it's about that news story.
Right. What I'm saying is sometimes they make it private.
Yeah, that's true. All right, hold it. Let me. All right, let me try one more. Okay. Let's see, YouTube. Let's try this one. Well, let's see. Where did it go? Oh, hold on, wait, I don't want to search. Wait a minute. Okay. I don't want to be on this page. Well, what we're looking for, people, is we're trying to get the audio of what Robin announced. Hey, how old was he,
actually,
Robin?
Eight or nine.
All right,
let me see if I can find it and try to play it back.
Yeah, because the headline I got, Kids Treehouse Converted into an Airbnb. Yeah, I'm watching it now. Oh, you know what I'll do?
Send me the link.
You know what? I'm getting ready to post it on. I'm getting ready to post it on It's My House TV, the Facebook page, so everybody can look at it. Okay, let me go to. So people that are listening. If you go to, wait a minute, I'm not there yet. Here we go. Go to Facebook. And I'm waiting for my page to open up. Okay, here we go. Go to It's My House TV on Facebook. Okay, wait, I'm still. I'm just waiting for my computer. I got to delete. No, I'm not delete, but.
Shut the
windows. Yeah, I got to shut some windows. Okay, here we go. And let me paste it in.
So I think I can play it back.
Okay. And I just posted it to It's My House. So if you go to It's My House TV on Facebook, I just posted the video that Robin was speaking of. And, you know, this is what we'll be doing with the Patreon. Is like I said, there's a $3 category tier. That's the people, well, only 15 people available. That's to basically help us pay for this Blog Talk thing on, so we can keep that going like we've been doing, going on 8 years, December 24th of this year. The $5 one will be brainstorming. In other words, just like Robin, I didn't know about the story. Robin brings it up, and then we say, all right, we're going to put together, we're going to do the brainstorming. That's $5 a month. But then somebody like Robin brings a project like this to us, and then that's where the $500 comes in to buy the materials, and we actually, they Airbnb that. So essentially, we're putting together projects that you can actually make money off of. Serious people, but you can start with $5 for that. Anyway, Robin, you can play that back.
It doesn't look.
Yeah,
look,
I might have
like
to find
it.
A new converter. I'll find a new converter over the weekend. Yeah, but we'll be. Yeah, so a lot of people that are struggling, the homeless included, it really comes down to these different distinctions of math problems.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find, and if you can create a product or a service behind that, you know.
Yep. Anytime you're solving a problem or bringing resolution, you can make that a business. And matter of fact,
exactly.
Get an EIN and LLC yourself.
Right.
Okay.
So.
Whatever, like Robin Lynn, I made Robin Lynn Productions. I have an EIN, a tax ID number, and now I can register a business or whatever, a service or whatever.
Right.
Okay, but you want to own your own, if you will, okay? And the best
right.
way to own something is to build it or create it.
Right.
Okay? Yes. So
well,
you
in
want
the case
to
like
create
from this hurricane in Louisiana. All right, here's some of the product items that I'm going to add to my product line is, okay, refrigerators, many refrigerators. All right, many refrigerators, emergency storm kits, first aid kits, you know, food prep for storms. Let's see, what else did I come up with? Sewing kits. And then what's interesting, like this, the thing in with Hurricane Ida, the last big storm that came to Louisiana, New Orleans at least, was 16 years ago. But there's storms happening all the time, anywhere around the world. So you got tornado season. So you can basically build a business around and just be prepared, all right, what part of the country has this type of inclement weather on a regular basis, you know, or you can, you know, Chicago or any city, you know, there's a certain amount of people that they have their municipal water shut off or their municipal electric shut off. What kind of products can I come up with or what kind of services can I come up with that will meet the needs of the person who needs electricity in their home or heat in their home. And some of these, you know, you might want to, you know, it. Some you might provide a service by, let's say, flashlight rentals, or you might find out, all right, how much what needs to be done in order for me to make manufacture flashlights? You know, what are the component parts of a flashlight? You know, where can I order these component parts of a flashlight? You know, or private label. I give it a real high profile one too, actually. Nike, the sportswear company, Nike is a private label. The founders of Nike, and I think it's one person, the founder of Nike basically had a shoe design. He had the specs. Then he went to China, and he went to a contract manufacturer that makes Nike shoes. So Nike, N-I-K-E, that is a private label sportswear company. Nike doesn't manufacture the shoe. He gives the specs of what kind of shoe or shoes or sportswear they have, and then they have a contract. That's why it's called contract manufacturing, and they actually make the shoe. Now Nike has arrangements with sports, you know, his outlets to distribute the product. Air Jordan, all right, is under Nike. Air Jordan is contracted to Nike because Nike doesn't manufacture this shoe, but Nike has the relationship with the contract manufacturers. And in addition to the Nike sportswear, sportswear product line, they also manufacture the Air Jordan. So Air Jordan and Nike both are private labels. You can have private labels for any product that you can think of, toothpaste, shampoo, seats, furniture. It just never ends. Ebony Fashion Fair. I don't know if they still have that out there. Ebony Fashion Fair was a private label. You know, when Johnny Johnson was still living. They had the Ebony Fashion Show, and that raised a lot of money for kids and whatnot, college kids. But that was a private label. He did not manufacture it. Now, Dudley Products, they manufacture their products. They actually make theirs. But there's so much to it, and that's why we'll be covering that in our Patreon group, and then we'll have people. Now we got our little mini product line ourselves, dealing with off grid housing. But all that stuff will be in the Patreon group. So that's It's My House TV on Patreon, and we do a test drive tomorrow morning at 10:30, Saturday at 10:30. And like I say, it's $3 just for people that want to support it. And that $3, my base will be coming over here to Blog Talk just to keep this running on the air. And then the $5, that's when we get into the brainstorming and the working out the different type of, like I said, we got real-life math problems, real-life arithmetic problems, storm weather arithmetic, Chinese menu arithmetic, millionaire math, generational wealth arithmetic, social capital math, utility bill math. That's essentially for people who are struggling to pay their utility bills, have had their utility bills shut off, eviction arithmetic or math, and foreclosure. And then we'll have some other stuff in there as well. So, What we shall do. I'm just waiting for my computer to. Man, all right, Robin's back. Robin, any luck with that audio?
No, sorry.
Well, Lee, I'm glad you told us about the story because essentially, you know what? We're going to make that one of our Patreon products. We're going to add that to our Patreon. We're going to either build a tree house or whatever and put it on Airbnb. Because if he can do it at 11 or whatever age he's at, we can do it.
Yep.
Man, frick,
yep.
Let me see if I can tackle it or no.
Would it be very expensive to refurbish, you know, those old abandoned RVs and stuff that people have? Can't we take those
well,
and refurbish
it,
them?
Well, 11-year-old, what's her name?
11-year-old, but to make them livable.
Well, 11-year-old, I think you've heard the video on audio on here. 11-year-old Laura Nelson. You've heard that audio, haven't you? About 11-year-old Laura Nelson.
Yes.
If she can do it, she paid $500. She invested. She paid $400 for the camper, and then $400 to get it fixed up. That includes getting rid of the mice that went in there and the junk, and her parents and some friends. So she spent the total of $800 total. $400 to buy the camper, and $400 to fix it up. Yeah, so we can do projects like that too. As a matter of fact, I think we should look for projects like that on a regular basis.
Yeah, and I think we should also do we can acquire land as well as materials. So that would be a good way that we can acquire those ghost towns.
Right. Yeah, we can something like
as well.
The matter of fact, for people, let me do it this way. Yeah, we can look for, in real time, we can locate stuff on, Facebook Marketplace or OfferUp or Craigslist. So little campers like that, or whatever they might be, there's a lot of those that you can pick up for under $1,000, or in this case, under $500. So, you know, it's,
and
like say, Laura Nelson did it with just $800.
There are some you can pick up, you just take them away, you know?
Let me see. Come on. And that's a good story you bought up. You know what? You know, I'm thinking right now. That's what we should probably do on a regular. Is constantly look for low cost items that we can turn around within a week and put it up. All right. Where is it? Let me play it right now.
Also tonight, the incredible transformation and the Buffalo Strong spirit that made it all happen. 7 Eyewitness News reporter Taylor Epps shows us how a young lady has completed her very own renovation project.
11-year-old Lauren Nelson had big plans for her summer.
I thought it was going to be pretty fun, but with COVID going on, it was going to be not as fun as it could be.
But things changed one day when she was flipping through an American Girl doll magazine at her home in Attica.
And she showed us a $650 VW bus. My husband was like, that's ridiculous. You could buy your own camper for that price.
So she did just that. Lauren saved some money and started looking. A neighbor just down the road had this 20-foot camper that caught her eye.
And then the one day, up popped a for sale sign, and she squealed the whole way home,
and she started negotiating.
It wasn't very hard. He said $500, and I said $400 because that was the money that I had in my bank account, and he said sold.
Then it was time to renovate.
It was a process. We brought home a family of mice. And so there was a lot of deep cleaning,
but that didn't stop her.
I was very motivated because I really wanted a place where I could just, like, hang out like my own house.
The whole renovation process took Lauren about 2 months, and with the help of family and friends, she was able to turn this into this.
It's called Camp Hygge. It means very comfortable and safe. It has its own kitchen and bathroom, so it's like a tiny house.
So now you're the owner of a tiny home at 11 years old.
Yes.
The whole project cost her $800.
She has 3 envelopes that she puts her money in, give, save, and spend. I think she made a really good choice. She now says she's part of the tiny home nation.
She was able to turn her summer around and hopes to inspire others to do the same.
Which is awesome to see that somebody who's 11 years old had her own vision but now is out there and other people are contacting us and they've gone out and bought a camper to do the same thing.
If you're looking to have some big plans in the future, you should go out and do it. Make it happen.
In Attica, Taylor Epps, 7 Eyewitness News.
I think we can have projects like that going on a weekly, or at least twice. You know, at least every other week. Bottom, you know, minimum, every other week. Starting off with one now. So,
Starting off with one house.
Off with one.
I agree.
And have that documented.
And then you deal and you appeal to the youth. And this is how you do it. So, and you hear me saying this. They used to teach us shop, automobile shop,
right.
Wood shop, home economics. They used to teach us in high school, and you could graduate from high school and go get a job as a seamstress or go get a job at Ford or in Detroit at the automobile factories or something. You can't do that. Upholstery. You can't do that anymore. They kick
right.
They don't have 4-H. We don't even have Lincoln Logs anymore. So you appeal to the youth and their parents. I say, hey, let's take it back to the basics. Remember when, back in the day, by the age of 15, children were married. Children were homeowners. Children were raising families and building and blah, blah,
and
blah.
My grandmother was married at 15.
Okay. Not that we're trying to say that we're just referencing that we want to bring back the basics and the building of the basics to the children and get them active in it so that by the time they don't wait until they're 18 and graduated, by the time they're 18 and graduated, they have more than half of their legacy already started.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Yep. See, because we're teaching you to how to build to live, not just building a place to live in, but to build to live.
Right.
If that makes sense to anybody.
Well, taking what Laura Nelson did, okay, she invested $800.
Yeah.
So if she rented that out, she can probably make $500 a month off of rental income. And
oh,
that's what was like. That's $6,000 a year.
She can
sell it outright for about $3,000 or $4,000 and triple her
money. I wouldn't sell it. All that work and effort just to sell it at one time, that's
here's what I'm saying.
Awful,
but you don't
horrible.
Stop at one. She, in other words, you take the money and just keep on, in other words, instead of finding one and fixing up to sell, you know, make it into a business of maybe finding 15
and
or
again,
20 in a month.
Again, I wouldn't sell them because your return on your investment, you sell it and you get money one time versus you lease it over and over again. So she paid $800.
I say do a combination of the two.
So she paid $800. She could lease it for $800 to $1,600 because
yeah.
rents are twice and double that. So you sell it one time, you get however many hundreds of dollars. But
you know, that's a very good
lease
point.
It, but you lease it. $1,600 times 12, however many years. You have the potential for
just
money.
If you do 1 year, let's say you just do 1 year, right? $500 a month.
But my point is that you have more potential for residual income versus
right.
selling it.
Right.
Okay. So now what I would do is I would build a whole big business and a whole chain of them and then sell the whole thing. That's what I would do.
Well, that's another math problem. That's another strategy. So see, all these things we'll
yep.
be doing in the Patreon group, where we're in those groups is hardcore. We won't be talking about reparations and none of that. We're going
to
be talking about this.
I have
and,
to stop giving it away.
Well, that's what the Patreon group will do, because like I said, we can, on the regular, we'll start with one simple project. You know, just with something, I mean, we can go on, we can find a camper somewhere where we're boots on the ground, you know, pitch in some money, get the thing
and
fixed
up. You know what I would say? As I would go to... They're where they have most cities have RVs, a block of RVs where people live in.
I've got about
right?
there's at least 8 RV parks within a 5
right.
mile radius of where
so,
I'm at right now.
So you go to the city and you say, "Hey, we'll take those away," and the city will give them to you.
Yeah, because I know some place in California, man, people just. They leave their RVs, just walk away from it because they're tired of the hassle.
Right. So they're sitting on city property, and the city will say, "Well, yeah, you'll take it away. Yeah, you can have it."
Mm-hmm.
So I would do that before I would go paying for one.
Right. Well, that's millionaire thinking. That's for sure. All right, Robin, I'm gonna play Factory City to take us out, and we'll talk later today, okay?
What's it like to live where you work? For most of us, that's unthinkable. But imagine living and working at one of the biggest factories in the world. Workplace the size of Monaco. For these 17,000 employees, it's reality. They come from all over China, seeking a brighter future at this factory called Yupa. Workers craft coffee makers, irons, and electric grills in staggering quantities every single day. But Yupa is more than a steady paycheck. It's home. People get married here. They send their kids to school here, but the work never stops. Yupa's managers are on a mission to produce new products for every corner of the globe that could forever change the way we think of made in China. Step behind the closed doors of modern China into a factory the size of a city.
Welcome to the place that calls itself Factory of the World. By the time you finish watching this program, Yupa's 17,000 Chinese workers will produce nearly 20,000 electrical appliances. Every day they churn out 60,000 irons. Every month, Yupa makes 36,000 coffee makers. That's two new machines for every Starbucks on the planet. And every year, these laborers produce a staggering 18 million electric grills. Stacked side by side, they'd span the Atlantic from New York to London. Chances are you own something built right here. Factories like these don't exist in North America or Europe, but they're not uncommon in China, where labor is cheap. Yupa runs on human sweat alone. No need for robots. To ensure non-stop production, workers need a steady stream of parts. Someone has to make sure those parts get to the right place in time. This is Ming Long Pa. He started work at Yupa in 1994.
I'm in charge of production control. Production control is the brain of the factory. Its main function is to coordinate each department.
If any of Yupa's factories run out of parts, Mr. He's job is on the line.
The production line cannot wait. We have to guarantee that our production is smooth. Running out of materials would affect our efficiency, affect our productivity, and affect our revenue. So I have to fix this in the shortest time possible.
Today, a problem at the iron factory needs smoothing out. Workers on the iron line are low on a crucial part. To keep up production, they need 2,000 units, and they need them now.
Just now I found out the main problems here at the iron department. One major problem is the case for model 603. They need 2,000 right now.
Traditional plants use outside suppliers for their components, not Yupa. To slash costs and stay competitive, Yupa builds its own parts on site. So Mr. He's supplier is only a bike ride away. But even the supplier is dangerously low on stock. Mr. He has found barely enough parts to last the day. When he gets another urgent call. Now the grill factory is low on a crucial component. Grills are the company's most profitable products. Yupa started producing one line of grills in 1994. Now, 60 assembly lines churn out 800 different models. Workers make one grill every 12 seconds. That's 50,000 grills per day, or 1.5 million per month. Enough grills for every person in Dallas. Grills bring in $350 million a year, but Yupa wants more. Little wonder Lu Jinye acts like a general leading his troops to war. By next year, managers expect workers to crank out $500 million worth of grills. Yupa's profits have to rise to outmuscle the competition. Mr. Ye supervises 850 workers on 30 lines.
We have to coordinate all these workers and pull all their thoughts into one. It takes teamwork to accomplish our goals, to get the results we want.
Mr. Ye is obsessed with quality control. His aim? Boost output without compromising quality. In a factory this big, with a production run so massive, even the hyper-efficient Mr. Ye hits a roadblock.
This holder piece holds the grill plate. What we're seeing now is the assembly of this piece. The problem is the size. It's the wrong size.
They've run out of part number 2627. It attaches the core heating element to the frame. Without this simple component, assembly lines will shut down. Unless Mr. Ha finds a fresh supply. And soon.
If we don't get them the parts, 6 production lines will have to stop.
When every part is on hand, grills assemble like a simple puzzle. Wires are linked to the heating element, and the element is fixed to the plate.
When it's not locked down properly, it will fall off. If it falls off, it will burn the hands of our customers and consumers. This job is very important.
Then it's time to connect the power cord.
The brown wire is live and the green wire is neutral. The one with the writing on it matches the brown wire. Connect them and that makes the wire live.
Each grill is inspected for flaws in construction or appearance. Finally, every grill is tested to make sure everything is in working order. On a typical day, Mr. Ye's team must make 700 of Yupa's 50,000 grills. Missing parts cause delays, cost Yupa a fortune, and force workers into overtime to meet their quota. Finding the missing parts falls to Mr. Ha, and the pressure is on. Mr. He finally arrives, and he has good news. He's found 2,000 parts to keep the lines moving, and 50,000 more are on the way. Mr. He's day has ended on a high note. He heads home to a company-subsidized apartment only minutes away. His wife, Hong Zhang-yu, also works for the plant. Together, they lead a life of relative luxury. Family life in China is a communal affair. His parents and his in-laws live here, thanks to Yupa. It's one more reason workers are fiercely loyal to their company.
Our products all have the Made in China tag. I hope our products can bring to consumers a sense of joy, a sense of it's worth it. This is my biggest wish.
Fulfilling that wish will come at a cost.
When I first arrived here, I didn't know anyone else, and we all have to live together. It was really tough in the beginning.
Yupa's next generation of workers must leave their families behind and devote their lives to the company. It's a place tourists never see. The new face of modern China. Competitive, hungry for profits, and ready to take on the world. Located near the city of Xiaomeng, the Yupa complex sprawls for 1.8 square kilometers, almost the size of Monaco.
We have about over 20 buildings here. You know, the largest building, you know, equal like 4 football fields. You can have 60 to 70 assembly lines. Each assembly line can have 25 to 35 workers in the line.
25 years ago, there were no factories here, only farms. In the 1980s, the Chinese government decided capitalism wasn't so bad after all. The communist regime established so-called special economic zones, designated places for free markets and foreign investments. Yupa, a Taiwanese company, moved here in 1988. In a few short years, it became the largest manufacturer of irons, electric grills, and espresso makers in the world. Yupa is a city unto itself, with restaurants and convenience stores, soccer fields and basketball courts, and living quarters for everyone from students to families. Success made it big, and size keeps it successful. Mass production runs push down costs. Almost all parts are made on-site, keeping supply costs low and parts within easy reach.
Because we are in this location pretty much isolated, we don't have satellite suppliers around us to build, you know, parts for us. So we had to do it in-house, and we had to do it in a large scale.
Yupa's main advantage is a cheap and endless labor force, ready to work for a fraction of a Western wage. 16-year-old Mao Fen Guo left her family and came here in 2008. But Guo isn't just looking for work. She's here to escape poverty and make her mother proud. In China, many parents prefer sons to daughters.
My mother has only two daughters. She's always upset about that. And in order to not let her down, I must work harder and harder.
Guo is a worker in training. With about 1,000 other students, she attends Yupa's on-site trade school. To get here, she had to pass entry exams and pay Yupa tuition. Now she's enrolled in 3 years of study and hands-on training at the factory. If she does well, Guo hopes for a job at Yupa.
At the very beginning, I thought it was very hard. But now that I've gone through all this, it's easier. There's a lot to learn, but I'm still full of confidence.
Today, she and her classmates are learning everything they ever wanted to know and more about irons. To get a job, Guo must learn the ins and outs of every product line.
We're changing constantly. Last time, we were making grills. Then we changed to coffee makers, and now electric irons.
Workers on 27 production lines pump out an iron every 15 seconds, and as many as 60,000 irons a day. Production includes at least 10 separate brands for dozens of companies. With over 30 steps to assembly, iron making is intricate work, and there's no room for error. Assembly starts with a water spray unit, made up of springs, rubber, and washers. With training and practice, it snaps into the spout in seconds.
If it's not closed tight, it will leak or blow. Then it won't work properly.
Now the sprayer and spout are joined to the handle. The two parts of the water reservoir are placed in a heating machine. That melts the space between them and makes the reservoir watertight.
Welding is an important part of production. However, it will be easy as long as we follow our operational guidelines.
Next, the thermostat is attached to the base.
You need to make sure you're using the correct format before you insert the base. Using a wrong base can lead to fire. Wiring is also important. Where there is a wiring mistake, there's hidden trouble.
A plastic buffer is placed between the heating element and the handle to keep the handle and the user's hand from getting too hot. After that, the plug is welded to the back of the iron.
We're connecting the wire for the power supply.
I can do about 4 to 5 pieces every minute and 300 pieces an hour.
Once the spray and steam buttons are attached, it's testing time. First, the steam and squirting functions. Second, the iron's electrical system. Faulty units are either repaired or removed. Finally, irons that pass inspection are packed up and shipped away. The team won't cut corners or settle for second best. Today, Guo and her classmates will put classroom theory into practice and work the iron mine. For a teenager from a small town, living and working in a giant factory can be overwhelming.
My life is not as hard as it was before. I'm getting used to this place now.
Work on the iron line goes better than expected. For Guo, juggling work and school isn't that difficult. The hard part is leaving family and living far from home.
I guess it's learning how to be independent. When I first arrived here, I didn't know anyone else, and we all have to live together. It was really tough in the beginning.
Like China, Guo is adapting to a new world of high technology and tough international competition. And like China itself, she's determined to succeed.
I don't see myself working on the production line forever, doing the same job. Maybe I'm a bit arrogant or too confident about myself, but I want a better future.
For some people, a better future keeps them married to their job. Workers at Yupa are married to the company. Based in southeast China, Yupa is one of the biggest factories on the planet. Today and every day, its 17,000 workers are getting the world ready for breakfast. In the next 24 hours, it will produce 1,200 conventional coffee makers. Over the next 30 days, these assembly lines will deliver 210,000 cappuccino espresso machines. In the space of 1 year, nearly 2.5 million coffee makers will pour out of Yupa and into the kitchens of the world. At the center of all this is Young Lee.
We already have 200 or 300 styles, and we develop and add over 40 new styles every year.
Lee's mandate is crucial and broad. Tackle any problem that could slow down non-stop production.
We have to make every effort to find these problems and to solve them. We have to make sure that every process is working perfectly. Manufacturing shouldn't be delayed because of these problems.
Today, he's got a brand new kind of problem. One of Yupa's big clients has designed a new coffee maker. It's up to Lee to build a working prototype to entice the client into going ahead with mass production. Hundreds of Yupa jobs and millions of dollars in potential business are now in Lee's hands.
Making prototypes is a large portion of my job and is vitally important to the development of the company.
Lee starts by assembling the heating system for the water and steam. Then he carefully places it into the main body. Just when Lee's ready to assemble it all, there are parts missing. The supplier is just a walk away, a long walk, but Lee doesn't mind the distance. Someone special is waiting for him at the supply depot. The person helping him today is his girlfriend. These perks make Yupa more than a place of work. With a workforce of 17,000, many of them married with kids, this factory city turns office space into personal space.
然后工作上面我们是有一点的话就有关系嘛。
Sometimes we work together. For example, if we need the help from the technician to solve production problems, then we meet each other afterwards.
Li Yang Li works in the parts supply department. She first came to Yuba in 2004.
We fell in love at first sight. I always think it must be God who makes her work here and wait for me. Even now, I still think the same.
Yupa management encourages these intimate connections. They believe couples that work together are more loyal to the company.
By working in the same company, we can go to work together and take care of each other. We can see each other more often. What's more, we can be with each other when we have a problem.
With the missing parts in hand, Li is ready for wiring. Making it all fit into the chamber isn't easy.
I will have to organize all the electrical wires properly to make sure the coffee maker operates safely.
But the real test will come after shipping. If the client approves of Li's model, Yupa could get a massive order. If it doesn't, hundreds of jobs are on the line.
If I make the prototype in a sloppy way, our customers will lose confidence in the quality of our products. It will be a great loss to our company.
Weeks later, Li's model is approved for mass production. And right away, he sets out to create a brand new production line. It takes a week to prepare the assembly line and train the workers to make the new coffee machine.
Making a coffee maker is not an easy job at all. It requires professional knowledge and a profound understanding of coffee culture.
When the prep is done, Factory City springs into action and works with astonishing speed. Li's prototype took half a day to make. Now line workers churn out 700 machines a day. Li's shift is done, and when work ends at Factory City, romance begins.
When we're done work, we normally go shopping together or take a walk. It gives us a sense of happiness.
The couple plan to get married at a mass wedding, paid for and organized by the company. All at once, dozens of Yupa workers will tie the knot, while thousands of co-workers look on.
If we take part in the group wedding, with the best wishes of all of our co-workers here, we know we will be getting married in the factory of the world, one dream, and that would be unforgettable.
A mass wedding is the couple's way of showing their love for each other and their passion for Yupa. Chef Xing Ming Li has a passion of his own, feeding the 17,000 workers that power the factory of the world. At Factory City, the day has barely begun. But Chef Xing Ming Li already faces his first daily deadline. Li runs one of five independent restaurants at Yupa. Competition between them is intense. Profits are razor thin. And Li needs thousands of customers every day just to survive. In his eyes, he's not just serving meals, he's fueling the workers that power the factory of the world.
If they don't eat well, or eat enough, they won't have enough energy. Then they won't perform well at Yupa.
It all starts with fresh ingredients. Beef, pork, bok choy, onions, carrots, and winter melon.
We have all fresh seasonal vegetables here. Whatever you can find from the food market, you can find here.
Everything is washed, sliced, and diced. Yupa churns out millions of kitchen appliances a year. But there are no food processors in Lee's kitchen. Nothing is automated. Everything is done by hand. By 9 a.m., Lee's staff is already racing against the clock.
We'll have to finish everything before 11 o'clock because Yupa staff restaurants all open at 11:30. We have to be there in advance.
In 2 hours, 3,000 workers will stop by for lunch. Lee expects just as many for dinner. This means his staff of 50 must serve 6,000 meals by sunset. That's 125 kilograms of oil, 50 kilograms of beef, and 300 kilograms of pork. That's more than 1 million tons of food every year. His chefs turn stock ingredients into hundreds of delicious dishes.
We can make different cuisines. Our chefs are all the best of their hometown.
They cook up dishes from Fujian, Sichuan, and Henan regions, and they'll soon add halal fare for Muslim clients.
I believe everything that we cook should taste like what your mom cooks for you at home.
Lee's obsession with food comes from growing up hungry.
My family was very poor. Although my dad was working very hard to earn money, we still didn't have much food to eat.
Now food is never in short supply, and all of Lee's clients return to work with their bellies full. Lee's passion for food has made him a perfectionist. He hunts the market for produce that's perfectly ripe and reasonably priced. In his kitchens, Lee controls the cooks, and no dish goes out without his approval.
Too bland. Some salt and chicken stock will make it taste better.
The special today is spicy Sichuan pork.
Actually, anyone can cook. The key is our chefs make their own special seasonings that you can't get from the market.
Lee insists the pork must be extremely fresh. He expects perfect timing from every cook.
Timing is what the chefs are really good at, but they may not be willing to share that information.
But now it's almost 10 a.m., and Lee's kitchen is about to hit the boiling point. With the clock ticking, the team of chefs are stir-frying and stewing to feed an army.
It might be a bit of an exaggeration to say that it's a battlefield, but it's true that we're really busy. We have to finish everything within 1 hour. Then we will deliver them to our restaurants. We don't have time to do other things.
By 11 a.m., they pull it off. Dozens of different dishes for 3,000 people and right on time. Drivers rush the dishes to the restaurant nearby. Competition between the five independent restaurants at Yupa keeps quality and choice high and prices low. Workers pay about 50 cents per meal, thanks to a company subsidy. To turn a profit, thousands of customers must pass through Lee's door each day. But it's not profits that keep Lee up at night. More than anything, he wants people to enjoy his food.
I've experienced a lot of sleepless nights. I often blame myself for the mistakes that occurred in the daytime. I should have done better.
So far, his customers look happy. After lunch, while workers crank out appliances, Lee will be planning dinner, determined to satisfy his next 3,000 customers.
I hope that Yupa and everyone else will trust me and become my friends. I'll be content if they all come to dine in my restaurant.
If feeding workers at the factory of the world is tough, try being the guy who must make everyone get along. In this factory city, 17,000 people live and work inside 1.8 square kilometers. Rush hour is a human traffic jam. Just getting to work on time is a job well done. Inside these walls, office politics and conflicts play out on a massive scale. The man managing all this human friction could have Yupa's toughest job of all. Now in his second year on the job, Yashin Fu is the manager of Yupa's service department. His job, address anything that affects the day-to-day life of Yupa's 17,000 workers.
I have to find a balance between the costs of the company and the needs of the employees. Too little and the employees will be dissatisfied. Too much and the company won't be happy, so it's a big challenge.
Keeping Yupa's army of laborers in line is no small task. At this regular weekly meeting, Fu is boosting company morale.
Leading them is like raising children. We have to raise them with love.
Yupa's workers come from every corner of China. Most are in their 20s and 30s. They work on average 40 hours a week and make between 90 and 320 US dollars a month. While wages are even higher in big cities like Shanghai, many Yupa workers make double what they did back home if they had any work there at all. As with any mass organization, thousands of employees create endless demands. It's Mr. Fu's job to address all of them. He does everything he can to keep everyone motivated and committed to staying at the factory of the world. Fu visits staff living quarters as part of his regular rounds.
We're now going to the workers' dormitory. I routinely go there to check if anything can be improved. If there is, I will talk to the superintendent.
Fu is part landlord and part tenants' rights advocate. Today, he's ensuring Yupa rooms are ready for a group of new workers. Average rent is only $6 per month, but the type of accommodation depends on a worker's rank and the amount of money they are willing to part with. Fu is paying a visit to Mao Fen Guo, who has a noise complaint. Fu believes that to build quality products, Yupa's workers must be well rested and well fed.
The challenge is that there are 17,000 employees and they come from all over China. Everyone has different tastes. I have to take care of everybody.
Yupa's restaurants are extremely competitive, and some have been known to skimp on meat portions to keep costs low.
This is
Yupa has strict rules about when and where vendors can sell their food. Foo keeps them in line.
Now we are going to check on the other restaurants. We have designated areas for them. If they break the rules, I will kick them out.
These vendors aren't trespassing. They work for the factory's restaurants. But they are breaking the rules by selling food too close to rival restaurants. Everyone must have a permit. A veteran on these streets, Fu recognizes this woman. He busted her once before. Today, Fu lets everyone off with a warning. Next time, he may ban them from selling food at Yupa.
I talk to them, but they will break the rules again, so I have to check on them every day.
China's web of cultures complicates Fu's job.
Everyone comes from different families and different provinces, so their customs of eating and living are totally different, so I have to adapt to them.
But one thing unites all of Yupa's workers, the world's most popular sport. On the field, tension and stress vanish.
Because employees are undergoing a lot of pressure at work, we have to give them an outlet and let them exercise. But most important is the team building.
Don't care for soccer? Yupa offers other ways for workers to get their exercise.
For entertainment, we have ball game competitions like basketball, table tennis, and other games. These sorts of competitions.
It's all part of Fu's mission at one of the world's biggest factories. A place with no boundaries between work and life. For Fu, it's a never-ending battle to keep the peace and to keep the company together.
It really is a miracle. A company this big, with all the employees together, holding hands and moving forward. This is not easy.
And while there may be harmony inside Yupa's walls, outside, competition is cutthroat. In a global market, innovation is key. Yupa's employees must endure tough changes to survive. In the global marketplace, there's no room for second best. To survive, companies need a competitive edge. Like most China-based companies, Yupa has relied on low labor costs, making products designed by others. But it wants to move up the production food chain. Yupa's leaders want to design products of their own. They have little choice. To thrive and survive, Yupa must develop a new generation of products. The factory's very existence depends on it. Thousands of jobs hang in the balance.
No work means not being able to live. This is a fundamental requirement. It's how humans survive. You have to earn money to make a living, and to earn money, you have to work.
Ji Rong Pan knows how high the stakes are. He is Yupa's Vice President of Product Innovation.
I think innovation is the competitive edge of our company. Because our company is in the field of home appliances and the whole home appliance industry is a lifestyle industry.
Mr. Pan sent his staff overseas to study the lifestyle products of the future. They returned with a simple message. The future is green.
We studied the consumers of North America and Europe and their thoughts on this new energy of the future. So we know that their love of the earth is actually very strong.
Pan and his designers make a bold decision. The first appliance in Yupa's new product line will be powered by the sun. It's a solar CD player.
We want to bring this clean solar energy concept into people's homes.
Going solar may sound easy, but solar panels are expensive, and they're meant to work outside, not in the dim corners of people's homes. A 3D image of Yupa's appliance of the future starts to emerge. Now the team must turn a digital design into reality.
This factory is a very important part of our development process. It helps turn a product concept into a finished prototype.
Using the design specs, a computerized milling machine cuts a foam cast. And the cast is converted into a hard plastic prototype. If things go according to plan, the model will be used to produce millions of identical copies.
It allows us to test the product to see if this fulfills our requirements while bringing value to the customers.
Now engineers perfect the solar power system. The system must collect and store solar energy. Every aspect of design must maximize energy efficiency.
We've spent a lot of time studying this. What kind of technology, what kind of material, what kind of parts can help us improve our energy efficiency?
Finally, Yupa's product of the future is revealed. The solar CD player is simple and elegant. The player will charge indoors when left near a window. And the system is uniquely versatile. It will work with any energy-efficient appliance Yupa designs. But one question remains. Will the world embrace Chinese solar products?
We want to bring what people originally thought of as an industrial thing and truly integrate it into their daily lives to enable consumers to truly experience solar energy. This is a very magical energy concept.
If these innovative products succeed, Yupa could achieve its dream, a dream it shares with China, to be the factory of the world.
I want consumers and everyone to have faith in our products and faith in the workers. I hope everyone can enjoy the products we produce. This will make us proud.
With Factory City in full swing and new products in the works, more and more goods will carry the Made in China label. But for China and Factory City, growth comes at a cost. Every day, the